You are now tuned in to the Jags Den Podcast, the official podcast of the Jaguars Wire, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group, and also the number one Jaguars podcast on the airwaves.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Jags Den Podcast. We are the number one Jaguars podcast on the airwaves. As James mentions in our intro there, I'm your host, Phil Smith, a.k.a. Phil the Filipino, and the gang is back together, guys. Jacob DeLawrence, James Johnson. Gentlemen, how are y'all doing? Good to be back.
Who are you again?
That's a loaded question. I'm not.
Yeah, I almost terminated your contract, Phil. It's been so long, but you know. I was like, why not? Why not bring him back? Why not? Me and Jacob were having too much fun without you, so.
Yeah, maybe some order will be restored today. I doubt it, but still.
But no, nonetheless, I'm good. Can't complain, man. Been studying tons of Senior Bowl stuff that we're going to cover, of course. We'll do that later down the road on this podcast. And that's pretty much it, man. Glad to have you back.
Yeah, man, doing good. Welcome back. Glad you got out of that homeless shelter or wherever you were, because honestly, we like putting Phil on a milk carton, and then we remembered nobody drinks milk out of a carton anymore.
Yeah, and then we were wondering, where did you guys get those cartons?
Yeah.
And who did you give all that money to in order to put my name on those cartons?
Yeah, it's good to make questions. Although, real quick, before we get started, Jay, I got a question. Last podcast, I said I was yelled into your Fournette riding shotgun. What is Phil then?
Phil is Corey Grant, I guess.
I'm okay with that.
Oh, wow, so you're just out with an injury. Like, you just messed your whole foot
right,
up.
Right, right.
But when available.
Don't lie, we've seen your 40 attempt, so don't even.
All right, well, this is getting off to be back here. So make sure you guys follow us at the Jaguars Wire for all the up-to-date Jacksonville Jaguars news. Of course, follow me at Phil the Filipino, F-I-L-I-P-I-N-O. James at @SportsGrind_Don and Jacob at _JDella. And make sure, you're following the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and also we have just been recently added to Deezer and Radio Public, and also USA Today has us on their Audio Boom network. So, guys, it is the off season. It is Super Bowl week. Not a lot going on for Jaguar fans, obviously. So we're right back to our old ways, and we're excited about the draft. So we're going to talk about a couple of things. Of course, the Senior Bowl was this past week, and you know we're looking ahead. But when, of course, as we always do when we start off the show, start off with some quick hits. And the Pro Bowl was last week down in Orlando. It had the weather was probably matched by the amount of excitement the three of us probably had for the Pro Bowl. It was a rainy
and that happened
today. And you know, apparently AFC won 26-7. I didn't watch. I don't know. That's what they said. Apparently, 9 right, million right. people watched. I don't know any one of them. So if you know them, tell them that there's other stuff on. They can watch something else. They don't have to watch the game. But you
on
know,
top of that, it looked a little thin in the stadium. I mean, granted, the weather was bad. But I'm just saying, I don't think a lot of people watched it in person either, if we're being honest.
Yeah, like, it looked like cooking some numbers.
It looked like SeaWorld, guys. Barren, and no one was there anymore.
Jesus.
Wow.
So, but yeah, not a lot. But, however, Calais Campbell did have a sack. And Jalen Ramsey caught a touchdown pass from Deshaun Watson, which, you know, Deshaun Watson is going to throw a lot of touchdowns to Jalen Ramsey, so it's good for him to get used to that. And so it was nice. That was nice to see. Did you guys catch the Pro Bowl?
No. Well, I caught bits and pieces
all right,
of
moving
it.
Moving on.
but not enough to discuss.
Like, that's still a thing. Like, why is the Pro Bowl still a thing?
How
is that a one all-star game nobody cares about?
You know, somebody mentioned on Twitter, this is actually kind of a good idea, in my opinion. Instead of doing a Pro Bowl every year, instead the NFL should do, like,
a bowl, or not necessarily a bowl, but an exhibition game between the two teams that had like the worst records. I don't know who put this out there, but it was kind of interesting.
They should just play Emma, whoever play who's.
to solve that question, because people out there think Alabama could be the NFL team. I highly doubt that, but hey, that would be interesting yearly.
Yeah, I don't know. They keep trying, I guess. But you know what, I did hear it was, you know, kind of fun because there were, like, you know, defensive players playing offense and vice versa and all that. But it was the lowest, I think, lowest amount of points a team has scored since like the 90s or something like that. But you know, it probably had a lot to do with the weather. But yeah, you just go into that thing and you just hope no one gets hurt. Juju Smith-Schuster had a little bit of a scare, but luckily he's okay. So, but yeah. Pro Bowl AFC wins 26-7. So, you know, that's that. But yeah, moving on there. Austin Severian Jenkins has tweeted. I'm just going to move on. We're not going to talk about the Pro Bowl anymore, guys. We're just going to move on.
Ever again.
Earlier in the week, Austin Severian Jenkins tweeted out essentially what seemed like a goodbye to the Jaguars, but the team has not yet made a decision on his option. I don't know if you guys had seen any of this or heard anything about that, heard anything about ASJ, but do you think his time here is done, or do you think they really haven't made a decision yet?
Didn't we say that was a waste of about $10 million, like about 10 million times this season?
Well, really, I think it's like $4 million for it, because it's an option deal. So
but still.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was his cap hit for last year. I can't remember, but go ahead, Jacob. I digress.
And I mean, it was a mistake they made to begin with. It cost you arguably the best tight end in franchise history, because he was like, "Yeah, I'm not staying here for this." So better late than never. At least you didn't re-up his contract, and. Well, at least yet, anyway, because God knows this front office may actually decide, you know what, on second thought, just come on back for that last year.
Well, I think the whole thing with this tenure was just he just wasn't ever healthy, wasn't it? I mean, he never really got a chance, did he?
Right, and that's what we discussed prior. Yeah, like when we first signed him, remember we had the podcast about his health and how many games he missed. I forgot how much it was, but that was the thing that we questioned going into the season was – whether he could stay healthy, and of course he didn't. And I think, like, what was telling of them, well, they haven't officially cut him yet or let him go or signed the option, however you want to put it. But I think what was really telling of what their plans are is the fact that they didn't bring him off of IR. And I know, like, he was only eligible for the last week or whatever when they played the Texans, that he became eligible to be brought back off of IR, but still, like, if they had, you know, long-term plans for him, you would think they wanted to, you know, see him at least just for that one game to kind of give them something, you know, a step to go into next year with or next season with, if they were going to bring him back. So I think that kind of showed their hand, if you will, the fact that they kept him on IR week 17 against the Texans. But again, like, I guess you could say that the official decision hasn't been made yet, but it does certainly look like, because you would think somebody from the front office called his manager and said, you know, hey, we're going to move on, for him to tweet something like that. It does look like they're going to be moving on.
Either that or he decided that, hey, let me force myself out of here because this just isn't working for me.
For you.
Right. I mean, and if that's the case, you just let him go still. If he doesn't want to be here, don't force him to be here by hand or whatever. But, and then, like, I talked about this on the Cover 3 podcast, too. Shout outs to the guys over there. But another thing about it is, for Tad to come out to refute that report, it kind of just, like, made the front office look bad. And at the same time, like, it made it, as Jacob said, it kind of made it, like, Austin Safarian Jenkins might be putting false information out there. But regardless of the situation, the fact that Tad addressed it kind of just make the front office look bad all around, in my opinion. But I guess we'll see what truly happens in the end.
Yeah, the timing of it's definitely interesting. I mean, back to the football side of things, and he was one of those guys that seemed like Blake was meshing with early on, and you know, as we mentioned, never really got the chance due to injury. So we'll see what happens there. Coming up next year, we're showing that the Jags have brought back restricted free agent Jerod Wilson on a 3-year deal, worth $9 million, guaranteeing about $1.5 million of those dollars. Do you guys think that means that he is Tashaun Gibson's potential successor?
I don't know about successor. I'd say, actually, he may be. you know how you think about it at first, you're like, nah, I don't know about that. Then you stop, you're like, you got a point. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he is the definition of scrappy and just never giving up, because to go from an undrafted free agent to practice squad to reserve special teams to now securing yourself $2 million guaranteed and you have a 3-year deal worth $9 million, not a bad payday. Mm-hmm.
And he can get more based off play time, too. So,
yeah. Somebody likes you enough to pay you and see something in you, so... Do I think he's Gibbs' replacement? No. Would I be surprised if he becomes Gibbs' replacement? Not at all.
Right, and something interesting you said there, Jacob, that hit the nail on the head was, you know, somebody thinks highly of him enough to pay him this kind of money. And the first thing, when you said that, the first thing that came to mind is that Doug Marrone, at least on the surface, it appears really likes my man Wilson. And I say that because last training camp, but he was one of the guys that praised Wilson and his efforts on the field as a reserve, or, you know, I think he had to come in for a little bit of time during training camp too, as a starter, because Gibson was hurt or something to that effect. But anyway, you know, Doug Marrone just kind of praised him and gloated about him and this, that, and the other. So I guess this is kind of telling of, you know, how they feel about him, at least Marrone. Who, you know, Marrone isn't a guy that he doesn't necessarily pinpoint somebody when he gives off a praise or a comment. You know, he's a guy that he'll praise the team in general, if you will, or if he's asked about a specific player, he'll go into detail, but he'll never like really just on his own point out a person. So that's a good sign for him. So in terms of if he's the guy going forward, I think basically what this is, hey, if we decide to move on from Gibson and we have to cut Gibson due to cap issues, as we all know, our cap situation, we're like $3 million over the cap right now as of today. But if the Jags come to a point where, you know, they need to sign somebody and they have to cut Gibson, like, you know, with Nick Foles or somebody, and it just gets to that point, they can do it, I think. And I think Wilson is the backup plan if it comes to that. So it's kind of like an optional thing. Like, hey, if we can keep Gibson, I think they'll keep him. I think they should keep Gibson. But if worse comes to worse, and I don't want to get Foles personally, but even though I have said I like Foles on this podcast, but if worse comes to worse, like, if we got to cut him to get Foles or bring Foles in, then, you know, we got Wilson to fall back on, who we just signed for 3 years.
Yeah, I was about to say, can we run back this tape from a couple episodes ago where you said you were a fan of Nick Foles coming to Jacksonville?
Yeah, I said I'm a fan of Nick Foles, though, but not at the price of $20 million a year, man. Like, I don't know. And that cap, like I said, I just said, that cap situation is rough. It's not keep like, I mean, it's in the back. I mean, I think like they'll be in the positive when they officially cut Austin Seferian Jenkins, but still, like, just think about like all the players you have to get rid of to make up for what Foles is gonna want. You know, is it really worth it? You're gonna have to give up a lot of defensive pieces when you look at it, and I don't know if he's worth that personally.
Well, hey, you know, as a good kind of transition there, as far as the cap, you know, depending on who they want to bring in, and, you know, we'll have all, you know, all summer to talk about that, or spring and the summer, I should say. Calais Campbell revealed earlier in the week that he and the Jags are working on a way to restructure his deal. That he revealed this over at the Pro Bowl to maybe free up some cap space for the team. And, you know, just Calais has just been, you know, that guy really since coming here, you know, just when he chose to come here over Denver, you know, that really was one of the biggest parts of the turnaround here. Yes, of course, the season didn't go the way we wanted it to, but he's just been such a great presence in the locker room and also in the community. You know, if you guys here locally in Jacksonville have had an opportunity to interact with him, he's just a great guy and really, really cool to see him doing this. So what do you guys see? What do you guys think of, you know, Calais just working with the team to make sure that we have the best chance to win? Because I think he's still very aware that the window is open. It's not as open as it was, but I think he's still aware that there's an opportunity to have something special here.
Calais out here pulling a Brady. I'm going to sign a big deal and restructure it every single year. And I'm not mad at it one bit. Because like you said, Phil, he understands that, hey, the window is open. It's a little bit closer to being closed now, but it's still an open window. It went from you having about maybe a 5-year window as a team to maybe about 3-4 if you're lucky. And Calais is 32. And again, I would like to apologize, Mr. Campbell, for saying that defensive linemen fall off once they hit 30, and you are the exception to the rule, sir. I'm very sorry. You are a great lineman and a great man. Please do not take my words the wrong way. I want no smoke whatsoever. That being said, it's the smart move just from a financial standpoint. You understand you're 32. You've gotten paid. You got a bunch of young pups who make your job easier that need to get paid. So let me just go ahead and put some back in the pot so we can pay everybody else, and hopefully we can go get this championship that eluded us last year, well, 2 seasons ago.
Right. Right. And the thing about, like, what y'all were saying, just to go off of what y'all were saying about the window closing, the window closes so much faster if he leaves. That's a key thing about this is the Jacksonville Jaguars almost have to keep him, because if Calais Campbell leaves, this defense is no longer the scary defense that we know it as. Yeah, sure, they got Yannick. They have Taven, who flashed in the interior. But Calais Campbell, make no mistake about it, even though he's 32 years of age and Yannick is, what, 24 or 23 or something, make no mistake about it, Calais Campbell is probably the best defensive lineman on this team, because he's a guy that not only he doesn't play just defensive end, he just doesn't play the 5 technique. He moves in and plays the 3 technique, and even dating back, I think he even played some nose tackle with the Arizona Cardinals. So he's so versatile, and on top of that, he's their best run defender. I forget the exact number that he had or the grade that he put up on PFF against the run. But if you lose him, you also lose your best run defender. And although you can make the argument that Darius is a pretty good one too, but the Jaguars would simply put the pass rush wouldn't be there that they've had, and the presence against the run, although, you know, they have struggled against the run, but they would really decline against the run without Calais. So this is a great move on all parties, the Jaguars and Calais. And, you know, hopefully, you know, this pays off for him in the long run, and he helps us to get to the Super Bowl that we've been hoping for a while now.
Yeah, I'll just add another bit to it real quick. You lose Calais, you lose your leader on the defensive side and a mentor for all of those young Bulls that you have. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's kind of like, hey, come sit down at the table real quick. Help me help you, help me help you, help mm-hmm. me.
Not only that, now that you mentioned leadership, that's something I actually wrote about that today with the Fournette situation and what Maurice Jones-Drew said about this locker room lacking leadership. The locker room does lack leadership, and Calais is one of the few leaders that they have. So, yeah, you make a good point. They lose him. There is no telling how chaotic the locker room would be without him, man. It would just be Jalen Ramsey just going off on everybody.
Boy, it would be highly entertaining, though.
No offense, Jalen, but all I'm saying is, yeah, they really do need him, not only as a player, not only as a person off the field to the community, but they need him in that locker room as well, and I'm glad he's coming back.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, was there, in terms of locker room turmoil, I don't think there was anything on par that was going on the defensive side compared to what was happening on the offensive side with Fournette, right? I mean, I feel like most of the most of everything that was going on was on the offensive side. Maybe I'm misremembering something. I don't know.
Well,
maybe
you guys there was the fight, of course, if we all remember, with Dante Fowler and Yannick.
That's true.
There was that. And then, like, we can't really speak on this here because, you know, we weren't there to witness this, but reportedly some fights happened in the locker room. I know Jay Glazer from Fox Sports mentioned that. And some people, some of the locals came out to say, some of the local reporters, that is, came out to say it was two defensive players. So, I mean, we, like I said, we don't know, like, if that holds any water or any of that. But, yeah, they do need him in terms of a mentor on in terms of in the locker room too, because if you notice, like, Yannick is a guy that I love Yannick to death, don't get me wrong, but he's a guy that the first thing that comes to mind is he had a penalty in the beginning of the season. I forgot who it was against, but he could be a little hot-headed sometimes is what I'm trying to say. He basically swung at an offensive lineman, some extracurricular stuff after the whistle, got penalized for it. You know, there's stuff that, like, still goes on that we need to get a hold of. And without Calais, you would think, like, stuff like that would only continue after the whistle and in the locker room. So, again, like, I'm glad he's coming back, man.
Yeah, I guess the point I was trying to make was, how much time is Calais Campbell spending with, like, Leonard Fournette, you know, for Fournette to benefit from a guy like that? I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know how much time the offensive defensive players are spending together, whether, you know, obviously they're not spending a lot of time during practice, but, you know, off the field or, you know, in their downtime or anything like that. You know, I just don't know. Just based off of the, you know, the behavior and some of the things we saw from Leonard Fournette, I'm just wondering, you know, I was just trying to think of what kind of outburst we had from the defense, but I didn't, you know, I forgot about the fight, and, you know what, they just got rid of Dante Fowler. So that's how they dealt with that. So, but yeah, but, like, you know, just what we've already been harping on, you know, really great to continue to have him here for both the team as well as the city altogether. But, you know, we want to move on here and talk about a couple things we haven't gotten to discuss yet as a group. First off, you know, one of the main topics, you know, the Jaguars definitely took their time interviewing every offensive coordinator prospect in the market before deciding on John DeFilippo, who was thought to be a pretty hot head coaching candidate after the season, but of course he was let go from the Minnesota Vikings. So what do you guys think about the signing of DeFilippo?
Those are my thoughts right there. Just pure silence.
Not all at once.
I'm looking at it like this. Me and Jay talked about it on the podcast that somehow got lost in the weeds. I think we put it in the same with the milk cartons with your missing pitcher. Don't know what happened. But of all the options, this is the best that we can come with. And again, it's not like you were rushed or forced into making this decision. You took forever and a day, it seemed like. I think me and Jay and you, Phil, were up next to get a call to come interview for the OC. Like, they're going to just put all three of us in there together and, like, hey, you three can figure this out. But, I mean, he got let go from the Vikings. The Vikings offense did not look good this year when he was running the show. And that's really sad considering the weapons that they had. And I know Jay wrote about this today, and he made mention that while he got canned in Minnesota, he doesn't quite have the offensive line. That's true. But, however, you had two backs in Minnesota that stay relatively healthy compared to one back in Jacksonville that doesn't stay healthy. And you can say, well, he had success in Philly with Foles and Wentz. Yeah, Wentz has looked spotty up and down when he's been healthy. And Foles is Foles. I mean, but how much of that is a product of him being in Doug Peterson's system? So it's not a bad hire. It's not a great hire. It's just a hire that's there. Like, right now, I'm not like, yes, we got the perfect person. We can go get Haskins or Murray, put him with him, or we get Will Greer. This will work perfect. We got a nice little 1-2 punch. We're here for 5 years. It's, all right, we got to hire. We see the pedigree. We see the obvious Coughlin connection, which, again, shocker, Coughlin hiring somebody that he knows. So now we just have to wait and see how it turns out.
So on the Lost episode that Jacob was referring to, I think me and him mostly talked on Todd Monken and Daryl Bevel. We did make mention of DeFilippo, but we had Monken and Bevel like as the main two that we spoke on because, you know, it looked like it was going to be one of those guys really at least at the time. So anyway, that being said, DeFilippo, again, referencing the Cover 3 podcast. Back in, I guess I did that in December. I can't remember. Yeah, I think it was December. But that was a guy that I said like would be my favorite hire if they made it. So as soon as that happened, the guys hit me up. Soon as it like it, immediately, like, hey, you remember on the podcast when you said you wanted DeFilippo? Well, he's here now. So he's a guy like, as Jacob mentioned, I love the whole connection and what he's done with quarterbacks. Although, you know, Jacob is a little skeptical on the work he's done. Me personally, like, it's just more than what he's done with Foles, and it's more than what he's done with Wentz. But even before that, he worked with a young Mark Sanchez, and like Mark Sanchez wasn't that bad as a rookie. You know what I'm saying? Like, he digressed afterwards.
Yeah, because you had a top five defense and you ran the ball 80% of the time.
Well, that's all we need here. We just need to be like just respectable on offense. That's the point I'm trying to make. Like, we don't need Bill Belichick or Josh McDaniels running the offense. We just, you know what I'm saying? We just got to be respectable and have enough of a respectable passing game. And I think that DeFilippo brings that into the equation. He also worked with Derek Carr as a rookie, if I'm not mistaken, because he was the Oakland Raiders coach for like 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. And then that year that everybody was praising Josh McCown for in, what was it, Cleveland, I think. He was also responsible for that. He was the offensive coordinator for that. So it was people looking at Josh McCown like, hey, this dude might have a career revitalization here or whatever at the time. But, of course, you know, they parted ways with their staff the year after, and DeFilippo was a part of that, and, you know, that's neither here or there. So all I'm saying is just like it just seems like everywhere he's going, he's worked with a young quarterback, or sometimes in Foles' case, an older quarterback, but he's gotten the best out of them in every destination that he's been. And I mean, that's all you can ask for. Like, the Jaguars need somebody that's good with quarterbacks because they suck at, for one, they suck at evaluating quarterbacks, clear cut and dry. And they need somebody, if they do get a young quarterback, they draft the guy, they need somebody that is going to be hands-on with them and can help that young man throughout the course of this season. So I guess we'll see what their decision is at the quarterback position, but I love the hire.
So how does it, the Vikings got rid of this guy because he was not running the football. I mean, I believe I don't remember the numbers, but I know they were not running the football. And then they hire the new guy, the Vikings, and the guy runs the ball 45 times, and you know, and they start winning football games. So, you know, I hear what you're saying. You know, of course you want to develop a quarterback, but for a guy who had problems running, you know, had an issue calling run plays, and you have Leonard Fournette, who, you know, you want to be this workhorse, you know, how does that translate? Does it just confirm that they're going to go quarterback? And they want this guy to be the one who to develop him? Or what does this hire mean?
No, not necessarily. Like, the thing about it is, I think that DeFilippo, or we'll call him Flip for short. I think Flip, while he was with the Minnesota Vikings, I think another thing worth noting is that some of it was his fault, because at the same time, he knew that he was going to be a head coach. Well, at least it looked like at the time. And he was trying to really build that resume that, hey, look, I'm the next Sean McVay, if you will. I can go out here and sling it as many times as I want, be successful at it, and win games that way. And I think he got caught up in that. And a lot of people have said he got caught up in that. And I think now it's a lesson learned. You would think with Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin here, there's going to be some sort of a run game. And to be honest with you, I think the lesson that he'll learn here is that Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin can help him balance out this approach and help him get back to being a head coaching candidate for whatever jobs are available next year. It might be ours, for crying out loud. We don't know. I'm not wishing anything on Doug, but I'm just saying. So But yeah, I think like he's learned his lesson, and Doug Marrone is just the excellent pairing for him now that he has learned that lesson.
Well, listen, if he was supposed to be, and we're at a point in the NFL now where if you've eaten at the same restaurant as Sean McVay, you're going to get an interview. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if he was supposed to be the next guy, like, where did it really, you know, what happened? Like Jake was saying, look at the, you have two stud receivers, two solid backs, and then, you know, Kirk Cousins is a serviceable guy. So, like, what happened?
Well, I mean, when you look at it, what they did in terms of a passing game, they put up historic numbers. Like, Kirk Cousins had, like, a 99 quarterback rating. And Thielen, if I'm not mistaken, had six games in a row where he had – that's a franchise record. That's an NFL record, or tied an NFL record with Megatron. He had six games where, you know, he had 100 yards or more. So, like, I don't know, like, what happened. But when you look at the astronomical figures that they put up as a passing game, truth be told, in my opinion, he still should be their offensive coordinator. I mean, I just – personally, I think they pulled the plug a little prematurely, and they could have waited it out till, you know, I know Dalvin Cook was a little injured too at the beginning of the season. We talked about that on the Cover 3 podcast, but I would have just gave it one more shot. And if I was Mike Zimmer, I would have just told him, hey, you know, meet me in the middle this year. Let's get more of a run game going, and, you know, let's see where it goes from there. But that's a good question, Phil. But I mean, in my opinion, he didn't do a bad job there. Like, right, the numbers right. that I saw, it was, like I say, historic numbers for Minnesota Vikings fans, if you ask them.
Yeah, but like you just said, he got too cute and he outthought himself. Like, he felt like he was going to be a head coach, so he's like, oh, let me show you what I can do. That's like a sign of a character flaw of, okay, we understand that you did that there, but what's not to say you won't come to Jacksonville where – we don't have a quarterback as of now. We may get one in the draft. God knows you can't guarantee it. And you have Fournette. And who says I end up with, let's say, the kid out of Missouri. Are we end up with, like, Tyrod or something. Some option that's not quite what you want it for, although I have championed Tyrod all year and will continue. Let's just say you end up with something out of left field. What's to say that Flip won't try to be cute again and thus, again, have the same problem that he had in Minnesota?
You can't. That's the thing. You can't be cute with Drew Lock. If you try Drew Lock out there and try and do what he did last year, you're going to end up with Blake Bortles in year one. That's the thing. Like, he's in a situation now where he can't do what he did last year. He's going to have some sort of a run game because the quarterbacks that's out there aren't guys that could go out there and sling the ball 30 times like Kirk Cousins and be successful.
Right. So like, that's why you get cute, though, with the play calling to hide your issues of, all right, everybody knows we're going to run now. I got to be cute and think of something to hide his issues.
You don't have that luxury. Me and you talked about that. You don't have that luxury, especially with Tyrod, because he holds on to the ball too long. So he don't.
But he ain't gonna throw that pick now, is he?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, a lot of these guys aren't gonna give Flip the luxury to do. Like, even though, yeah, I see what you're saying. You can scheme around stuff and whatnot, but I don't see Drew Lock going out there and being successful in year one. Now, I mean, not if he's gonna be a guy throwing the ball 30 times a game. Personally, I mean, that's just. Yeah. Too much for a rookie quarterback. So,
I mean, I think what you saw, my bad, Jake, go ahead.
Yeah, you good? Go ahead.
I think what you saw, what Jacob is really talking about is, like, he really, like you said, he outthought himself. He literally did the coach's version of running before he even catches the football. Like, that's what he did. That's what he was doing in Minnesota. So, you know, he obviously impressed, and, you know, I do think it may have come down to. Just communication, and maybe they never had that conversation, or maybe they did and he just ignored it. I mean, who knows what happened, but, you know, the numbers are there, you know, as you mentioned, but apparently, you know, just didn't pan out. And of course, look how the Vikings season went. You know, they spent all that money and on the quarterback, and they're watching the playoffs at home just like the rest of us. So, you know, we'll definitely
I want to touch on something that you just said too, like all the money that they paid Kirk Cousins. Like, and somebody on another, I think it was Locked On Jazz, brought up a good point. When you pay a quarterback that much money, then why not take him out there and make him throw the ball that much? You know what I'm saying? Like, he's got the first all guaranteed contract in NFL history, or I guess free agent contract in NFL history. Like, you know, like, what's wrong with DeFlippo using him in that manner, especially for what he got paid? Like, I would, if I was a fan, I'd say, yeah, go out there and throw the ball 30 times a game. If I'm paying you $30 million a year for the next 3 years, like.
Yeah, but here's the argument. Did you pay Kirk Cousins $90 million to throw the ball 30 times a game, or did you pay Kirk Cousins $90 million to be Kirk Cousins in those clutch moments and win those games and keep you in them?
Kirk Cousins ain't clutch, though. That's the thing. That's never been his MO.
Clutch enough.
Nah, man, come on. Like, how many playoff games have the Redskins won? Like,
I mean, come on, it's Washington. So, I mean, you're just cursed.
I'm just saying, like, Kirk, that ain't one word that I would associate with Kirk is clutch, in my opinion. I'm just saying.
Say clutch. He's, I don't want to say serviceable. Because that's an insult. He's above serviceable. He's reliable enough. How about that?
I don't know about that. I don't know.
But here's my point. Did you really pay Kirk Cousins $30 million to throw the ball 30 times a game? Because I don't think you did.
No, you're right. You make a good point. I don't think they paid him to do that. But, I mean, for that price, you might as well.
It's like
For $30 million a year, you better go out there and play defense for me, too. As a matter of fact, line up as like quarterback.
It's like me giving Phil $30 million a year to go dunk. Like, come on, I know he can't go do that. I'm
gonna pay literally just sitting here. I didn't even do anything. Why did I?
Welcome back. You shouldn't have took 2 months off. I'm gonna go pay Phil $30 million to go do stand up. That's what he does. I'm not gonna pay him $30 million to go dunk a basketball. Argument.
I'll do all of the hack Asian jokes you want for $30 million. Remember how, like, Michael Jordan was going to, like, play on Moron Mountain, like, with a chain? Like, I'll do that. I'll do comedy on Moron Mountain for $30 million. I don't care.
Lord Jesus. For $30 million, I don't blame you, Phil.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. Well, you know, this obviously has sparked a lively debate, and pretty much that's all we'll have until we see the offense, you know, and come August, and we'll see what happens. It also really depends on who we have at quarterback. You know what I mean? So we'll see where it goes. But, you know, look, that's behind us. And now we're looking ahead. The Senior Bowl, the Senior Bowl was this past week. There were some prospects that the Jags did meet with that we'll have Jay talk about. And we also, of course, you know, we're back in the quarterback discussion. Who's going to be next to see if they can, you know, fill the shoes of a Mark Brunell and even David Garrard, who had some moderate success around here. That's who we're comparing, guys. That's the legacy that the next quarterback has to live up to, with David Garrard, who was solid, but
for 1 year,
not walking
for 1 year.
Hey, listen, that was a good year. It was a good year.
It was.
It was a good year.
I enjoyed it.
So,
you know, I got season tickets for $5 that year. Dead serious.
Yep, and you know we whooped the Steelers' ass that season too. So, but that's, you know, neither here nor there. But yeah. So who are some of the prospects that the Jags met with, and did any of the quarterbacks stand out? You know, we saw what happened with Josh Allen last year. He had a good showing, and he ended up taking, and the Bills took him as their running back at whatever pick that they did. So, what prospects did the team meet with, and did any of the quarterbacks stick out?
So, yeah, per my man Zach Goodall on Locked On Jags, they met with Will Greer, Drew Lock, Tyree Jackson, Terry McLaurin, Jacoby Myers, Gary Jennings, Dalton Risner, Chris Lindstrom from Boston College, Bu Benchwal, I might be butchering his name, Foster Monroe, Tommy Sweeney, and Corey Ballantyne. So, of those guys, I guess, like, we'll just talk about the notable ones. Terry McLaurin, the receiver from Ohio State, who the Jags reportedly met with twice, according to Locked On Jags, was phenomenal. He just couldn't be stopped from, like, I didn't go to the Senior Bowl, but I watched the Senior Bowl film and what they showed on TV, and I watched the game. And he was a guy that, like, I know y'all saw all the retweets I was putting out of him. He was just flying past everybody as a speed threat. Just shaking and baking, breaking ankles, you name it. alongside the kid from South Carolina, Debo Samuel. So both of those guys, like, they were the top two receivers of the whole situation. So that's a guy that he got a lot of DJ Chark in him. He could play special teams. He's a guy that I would definitely look out for the Jazz getting on day two. He's like a second to third round type pick. So that was one of the big ones. Dalton Risner and Chris Lindstrom, they absolutely destroyed everything in front of them on the offensive line. As we all know, Lindstrom plays guard, Risner plays tackle. And those guys were just maulers all week, just to put it lightly. Lindstrom has a connection with Tom Coughlin and Chris Snee, who's one of our scouts, who's Tom Coughlin's son-in-law. As we all know, he played with the Giants as well. He played guard there. But those guys all went to Boston College. They've been watching Lindstrom for a long time, basically. And Lindstrom has built a relationship, especially with Chris Snee. So look out for him. Like, he might be a second-round pick for us, definitely. So Risner was a good guy at right tackle. As we all know, we're getting rid of Jeremy Parnell, or could be getting rid of Jeremy Parnell. He's the guy to look out at that position. So, yeah, those were the guys that they met with that really caught my eye.
So some O-line depth, which we definitely need, and I am not opposed to at all. And we're going to add another receiver to the already 20-man group receivers core.
right. Well, and in the in the case of Lindstrom and Risner, like, it would be much more than depth with those two, because AJ can, I think we all can agree here at this podcast that he's probably gone. Like, they're not going to re-sign him in free agency. That's why Lindstrom makes so much sense, aside from the Boston College connection or whatever. But yeah, I see, if he isn't taken in the first round, I don't see how the Jazz pass on Lindstrom in the second round if he's there, but I guess time will tell. As for the quarterbacks, too, that's what Phil also asked about. Of those guys, nobody really impressed enough, in my opinion, to be taken in the top 10. I know we talked about Daniel Jones earlier. He was kind of a disappointment up until the Senior Bowl game, but throughout the practices, a lot of people didn't like what they saw. I didn't like what I saw on TV from him in the game or throughout practices. But Will Greer, somebody that me and Phil and Jacob have discussed, that's got to look out for in day two if the Jazz want to go that route. You know, he's a guy that has touch at times, but then he gets in a rut where, you know, he's at a low that he can't get out of. Like, that's kind of a Blake Bortles trait. So, you know, I guess it just depends on, like, what they do in day one in terms of Drew Lock. But him and Tyree Jackson are the two that I think I would take personally, if it came to it, if we had to. Those are the two that I would take out of this Senior Bowl group in totality.
All right. Daniel Jones, that's the kid out of Duke that is, his coach was the whisperer for Eli and Peyton, right?
Yeah, David Cutcliffe. Let's hope that connection gets him in New York. Let's hope, so we could get Haskins.
So I see people potentially taking him early and way over where he should be.
Yep.
Like you said, I don't see too much about Daniel Jones that impresses me. And honestly, I feel like a lot of his claim is because he's the quarterback that was under Cutcliffe and he's connected to Eli and Peyton and by default Archie. So I think it's a lot of the names around him that is drumming up the interest in him. Mm-hmm. But who knows? He could turn out. Drew Lock. It's like you look at him one minute, it's like, oh, man, you got all the tools to be a franchise quarterback. You might not be one of the best, but you're, like, good enough to win a Super Bowl. Because, I mean, Trent Dilfer has one, so, you know, it is what it is.
Wow. Yeah, as a Baltimore Ravens fan, you would know about that one.
Ooh, boy. All right, Trent, you won one.
Everybody gets one, as Spider-Man says.
That was your one. Don't know how you got it, but moving on. Will Greer, like you mentioned, Will Greer is a quarterback that is incredibly frustrating when you watch him on tape because he has all the tools. He makes all the passes that you're like, perfect. And then he goes around and makes all the passes that you're like, what the hell are we doing here? Mm-hmm. Like, son, what did you see?
Right. Not and only that, I think his lower body mechanics gets him in a lot of trouble,
personally. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. I haven't fully broken down to the level that you have, but I have seen where there are some times where his foot, he gets a little happy feet at times. Mm-hmm. But I will say a lot of Will Greer's mistakes, I don't know, this just may be me and maybe I'm giving it too much credit, comes from playing in the Big 12 where every single game is 49 to 48.
Yeah.
Like you live in a shootout every single Saturday. It's like the game of Tecmo Bowl. So there are going to be times where you're going to try to force the issue because, you know, if you don't score, you're probably going to lose the game.
Right.
So I can see that. And, yeah, Will Greer, if you take Will Greer, you got to take him in the first round. You can't take him before pick number 20 if you take him in the first round. Ideally, maybe you catch him late second, mid second, because who really needs a quarterback other than us, the Giants, maybe the Raiders?
Well, I think you're definitely going to see people trade up for sure to get Haskins for Kyler Murray. Like, and these guys, I mean, and even though the quarterbacks are not that impressive after the first two with Murray and Haskins, like, people are going to reach. I mean, that's just history. Like, you see, it's going to happen.
Right, yeah. For that position, yeah. So,
you can make the argument that first two aren't that impressive themselves.
Yeah. That
Murray and Haskins, very small sample size.
For the guys, though, you know?
Yeah. So. Things lean more toward them working out better for Murray than they do Haskins simply because of Baker Mayfield, because right. of Russell, because of Drew Brees. You have quarterbacks that either are his height or that are his height and play like him or that play like him and they're successful. Haskins, on the other hand, is a quarterback who started for 1 year at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. Had and he's a hard out. Comparison for some.
Very poor.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is
great,
and he doesn't. He's not mobile either. Like that's the biggest concern of mine.
You know who Haskins reminds me of, and it just hit me, Cardale Jones.
Okay, I was about to say, don't say Byron Leftwich, bro, because that we were gonna have to kick you off the show if you said that, man. Oh,
he reminds me of Cardale Jones, and I think he's smart enough, and maybe he learned from watching Cardale Jones from a way far distance of. The iron is hot for me now. Let me go get paid. If it bottoms out, it bottoms out. Mm-hmm. But I do see a lot of Cardale Jones in him. And I also see a little bit of Byron Leftwich and a little bit of Jamarcus Russell. But, like, good Jamarcus Russell.
Nah, I can't. I ain't going to put that on him, man. The Leftwich and Russell, I wouldn't dare put that on him. Like, he's a hard comparison for me. I'm still, like, searching for who he feels like to me. But, I mean, like, I see... a hint as a passer, I see a hint of Ben Roethlisberger. But like,
oh, so you put back? No, hold on. So you put Matthew Ben on him, but you won't put Jamarcus or Leftwich on him.
In terms, you don't. Why would you put that? Like he,
I said good Jamarcus, LSU Jamarcus.
I don't remember that much of Jamarcus being good. That's my thing. What you were saying, Phil?
That was like one game. That's how we got.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I don't remember any good Jamarcus. What? Where did you see this at? Like,
at LSU. That was it.
It was at Wingstop. That's where you saw it.
Oh, the good old Wingstop. Hey, shout out to Wingstop if they want to give us a sponsorship.
That's who we need for a sponsor. Yo, oh my God.
Because apparently people be listening in to these podcasts. One of our guests, I'm not going to say who it was or anything or tell his information. But one of our guests say DraftKings reached out to him from listening to our podcast. So Wingstop, if you're listening, we here for it, man.
No, hold on. DraftKings, guys, come talk to us. Like, we can make this work.
We surely can.
Give us a promo code. We can make this work for you. We can make this work for us. Everybody wins here. Just come talk to us. But back to your point about Haskins being a tough comparison.
Oh yeah. Oh, you want me to finish up on it? I thought you were about to say something. Yeah, like he's just a tough comparison for me. Like I'm eventually gonna find one. And I've seen like four pieces of film on him in terms of like full games. But right now, I can't really pinpoint that one guy. Like the one I keep seeing is Byron Leftwich, which I don't see at all. Like, aside, like aside from like the immobility, like I don't know where people are getting that one from in particular, but
could you say Cam minus the mobility?
I can't even say that. Like, I think he's more accurate than Cam. I think he's a better decision maker than Cam. I think his placement is better than Cam's. I can't say Newton. You know, like,
I mean, you got to think of Cam's MVP year when Cam was healthy, and then look at Haskins and take away the mobility of Cam. I think that may be the best comparison as far as size and everything else.
When Cam was on that year, I could see that. I see what you call
healthy Cam. Yeah, a healthy Cam, not the Cam that we got last year, but like a healthy Cam Newton.
Cam that was dancing all over the field that year. I forgot what year that was. Rivera took him to the Super Bowl 50, was it?
16?
Yeah, that was Super Bowl 50 against the Broncos, wasn't it?
Lost to Peyton, though.
Yeah, yep. So in terms of the other quarterback, I mentioned Tyree Jackson. He's a guy that I like because, you know, like, everybody knows how I feel about accuracy issues after Blake Bortles and Blaine Gabbert too. And, you know, like, those guys had no reason to be taken where they were in the draft. I mean, I get it, you know, like, you can't help where you're taken in the draft as a prospect, but those guys, due to their accuracy issues, are guys that had no business being taken where they were. But see, with Tyree Jackson, you had the luxury of taking him like as a third round pick or a fourth round pick. Where is it more so worth it than spending a second or a first round pick on somebody? So he's a guy that he has all the tools. He was killing it with all of the deep balls in the Senior Bowl. He was a guy that a lot of people said electrified the Senior Bowl game because it was kind of like, I know on Locked On Jaguars, they were saying it was kind of dead until he got into the game. So, you know, he's a guy, of course, like, you know, he's got to work on his mechanics, which he is. He's working with Jordan Palmer, who is Carson Palmer's brother. So we'll see how that goes. But he's a guy that he's raw, got a lot of upside. And he's a guy that I would like, if you could keep DeFlippo for like at least 2 to 3 years, I would like pairing him up with DeFlippo and seeing what he can do with a young man, because he does have the tools.
All right, let's just look at Tyree Jackson. You said he's a prospect and he's a project, and I agree. So let's say the two toughest teams he played last year are arguably Army and Troy. Fair enough?
Oh.
I'll go ahead and run through the list real quick. It's Delaware State, Temple, Eastern Michigan, Rutgers, Army, Central Michigan, Akron, Toledo, Miami of Ohio, Kent State, Ohio, Bowling Green State, Northern Illinois, and then Troy in the bowl game.
Temple with Matt Raoul stand out to me because they're a very well-coached team. And did you say Ohio?
Yes.
Like Ohio State or Ohio?
Ohio.
Okay, never mind. So, yeah, like Temple is the best one of that group. No disrespect, Ohio Wildcats, but
Wildcats
or whatever it is.
I say Temple's third best because Army almost knocked off Oklahoma, I do believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Norman. Wow, I almost said Stillwater. Whoops, don't kill me, guys. And then Troy was ranked like number 25 for a couple weeks last year. So, okay, we'll say Temple, Troy, Army. Against Temple, he went 26 of 45, 58% completion, threw for 275, 3 touchdowns and a pick. And he ran for 3 yards, whatever. He had a pass rating of 127. Mm-hmm. Against Army, he lost that game 24 to 10. He went 10 of 24. 42% completion, only threw for 152, had 1 touchdown, no picks, passer rating of 109. In the bowl game against Troy, he went 20 of 35, 57%, 274, 1 touchdown, 1 pick, 127 passer rating. For the season, he was 55% on completion, 28 and 12. I mean, you're right, he's a project, but I'm just looking at that and what's the earliest you would take him that you consider is in a reach?
What round would I consider him a reach at? Definitely the second round. I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that. So of course, fifth? The first. let me see, third. Let me think. I'm trying to think of prospects along the lines of a third round pick. Yeah, I think if you take him late third round is the highest I would take him personally. All right. Late third round. I don't even think I would take him in the beginning of the third, but late third round, like where we got that pick from the Rams, which will be like the last compensatory pick of the third round if the Rams beat the Patriots. I would take him with that pick if he's there.
All right, so let's do this real quick. Drew Lock, you taking Lock or Jackson?
Ooh. I can't take Lock.
It's a quick pick 'em. All right, so you're taking Jackson.
No, I can't. Yeah, I got to go with Jackson, man.
All right, I'm not even going to put a round on this. I'm not going to handicap you into taking a round. Okay. Jones or Jackson?
Jackson.
Greer or Jackson?
Ooh, Greer. Yeah, Greer.
Trace McSorley or Jackson?
Jackson.
Ryan Finley or Jackson?
Jackson.
Gardner Minshew or Jackson?
Gardner Minshew is the one I haven't studied from the Senior Bowl.
Okay,
Jackson, I say Jackson because I can't speak on Minshew right now.
Okay, and lastly, Jarrett Stidham or Jackson?
Definitely Jackson.
So you're telling me Jackson is the fourth best quarterback in this draft class?
So, yeah, there is what's out? Oklahoma. What's his name? Murray.
Murray, yes. Haskins, Greer, Jackson Greer. Is what you're telling me.
Yeah, that's roughly right. Yeah. He's, in my opinion, even though he's the rawest, he's roughly, yeah. But he, like I said, he's a project, and that kind of goes to show you how bad this quarterback class is for me to say that. The fourth guy in this whole equation is a project, basically. But I just don't think highly of this class aside from those first two in Murray and
Haskins
and Greer. I'm kind of meh on Greer for the right price, as we discussed.
So there we have it, folks. You go get your stopgap quarterback, and we will see you right again this time next year when we discuss if we want to take the kid out of Oregon or one of the kids from Bama or Jalen Hurts or the kid from boom, boom, boom.
Well, that's the whole thing, too, right? I mean, people are, do you wait? You know, do you bring in a Tyrod or God forbid, Joe Flacco or somebody, you know?
Whoa.
Sorry, we're not doing this Joe Flacco elite conversation, okay? We don't have time.
Right? We don't. This. He sucks, okay?
I never said he was elite. Man. I just said put some respect on the man's name. That's all.
Look, he plays well when the time calls for it. I'll put it away. Anyway, that's the whole thing. It's like, do you wait? You know, is because you pick a guy this year. You know, he's the guy. You know, they're obviously not going to go. They're not going to go with another. You know, they're not going to go get Tua or somebody else. Whoever, you know,
Dave Caldwell. Can you wait? That's the issue. Like Dave Caldwell was supposed to be fired this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, like it, in his mind, it all depends on, like, you know, Dave Caldwell and a little bit of what Tom Coughlin feels. But Dave Caldwell, from how it seems, does all the draft work. And Tom Coughlin basically is the guy that he helps with the draft work and he signs off on each pick. But Caldwell is the one that does a bulk of the work. So, like, he's a guy you have to think he probably thought he was going to get fired this year. So if you can't get, say, a Nick Foles, and you can get a Tyrod, like if you're him, do you feel safe with going with Tyrod throughout the whole year, or do you feel safer with going with, say, a Tyrod and a Haskins on the roster, and hope that would save your chances of hanging on a little bit longer? So I think in his mind he can't wait until the kid from Oregon comes out. He can't wait for Tua to come out. Like, it's almost like he has to do something now because his seat of everybody in the front office is probably the hottest. And that's just my opinion.
So why don't you call Tampa Bay and see if you can pry Jameis?
You can't, because we had this discussion in the last episode, man. We all know Bruce Arians love Jameis. He went to Tampa for Jameis. They not coming up off.
That's what I'm saying. Man. Right, but I'm saying call somebody and see if you can pry somebody.
Yeah,
if
of
you
course,
feel that, like, so bad. So maybe, you know, God forbid that I'm even saying this, but Jesus, maybe Tannehill.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of people who have mentioned Tannehill to the Jags.
And like, I mean, like, I don't think may help him.
Maybe. I don't think so. I wouldn't, if I was Dave Caldwell, I wouldn't feel safe with Tannehill.
Service him here when, before he got hurt. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right. He could be better than Blake Bortles, you know?
Yeah, get Tannehill, and then you go get, like, Locke or Greer. And then if it doesn't work out, hey, you tried it, and then you go get you another better quarterback. Like I'm saying, somebody like Tannehill or somebody like Jameis, although if by some odd chance you got Jameis and he panned out, that'd be more of a long-term fix. Mm-hmm. But, like, instead of trying to find a free agent stopgap, maybe make a trade. Maybe offer up a third round or something. Because I just pulled up a list of, like, possible free agent quarterbacks. Teddy Bridgewater is again a free agent. Don't see him leaving New Orleans. I don't. I just don't.
I wouldn't go if I were him.
Yeah, it's, like, too good. Like, you are set to be the man in New Orleans when Breeze finally decides to step down. So you have Nick Foles, which, again, we've talked about ad nauseum. That's going to be a pretty price tag for whoever decides to pay for him. And then we have Tyrod. Again, we talked about ad nauseum. Or you go get Fitzpatrick and hope some more Fitzmagic is still left in that tank.
Dude, I'm all for getting Fitzpatrick. And you know why? Because I want to see, dude, I want to see more press conferences like the one where he stole DeSean Jackson clothes. Jacksonville needs that in their locker room. We need that. I would love to see Fitzpatrick here dressed up like Conor McGregor answering questions from the Florida Times Union. That'll be so dope.
Yeah, I'm on board. I'm on board with that, too.
Hey, you know what? I'm just here for the hilarity of it, so why not?
So the decision is made. Ryan Tannehill and Haskins in the draft, and we'll call it a day.
I thought it was Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick,
not Tannehill. I'm sorry.
Man, well, look, we're gonna have this quarterback conversation all summer long. Obviously up until the end of April. So, you're probably gonna get tired of us talking about it. But you know what? There's not much else to talk about. So that's what it's gonna be. So we will see which direction they go with, and when it comes to quarterbacks, a bunch of different possibilities. So a couple more things we want to talk about here is some comments that Dante Fowler got into. Of course, Dante Fowler is getting ready to play in the Super Bowl. Anyway, he's about to go play in the Super Bowl with the Rams. He had some comments about last year's Jacksonville Jaguar team, and essentially just coming down to it, saying that, you know, the team wasn't humble, and the Rams focus on what's ahead of them. What do you make of these comments from Dante Fowler?
Who hurt you? Like, I'll just say what we're all thinking here. Like, who hurt you?
And who asked?
Well, he got asked, unfortunately.
Okay.
But
it might have been somebody from the Florida Times Union, like Philip Heilman or somebody. You know, because, like, when you go to the convention, like, as a writer, the first thing you do is go find somebody from the team that played for the team that you cover. So, I mean, I would think, like, somebody from the Florida Times Union or a Jacksonville media member.
Apparently, it came in a Sports Illustrated piece.
Okay. But, yeah, you're right. You're right. It did come in SI.
But the moral of the story is, like, I understand your time in Jacksonville wasn't the best for you and it wasn't the best for the franchise. For whatever reason, it just did not work. Mm-hmm. And as we've all said on this podcast, I would have traded Fowler for a two-piece and no biscuit from basically KFC or churches. Like, it didn't matter at this point. Like I constantly said, call the Jets up. Hey, we'll take Bridgewater. Here's Fowler. We'll even give you a draft pick, too. So the team did you a favor. They weren't going to re-sign you. They let you go so you could go somewhere else and maybe potentially re-sign there. And you end up in the Super Bowl. Like, I think this comes back to that character issue of Fowler that we've all talked about, of how he's like a problem. There's the option of you can say how you feel honestly, but not the best deal when you're coming upon free agency, because now everybody's looking at you like, I don't know, he might talk bad about us too, you know. Right. And then there's the option of, well, I just don't want to talk about it, or it wasn't necessarily the best of times for me or the franchise, but I'm grateful for everything that happened there. Like, there's many ways to go about this, And yes, this is me of all people saying that he went the wrong way by telling us how he felt. But time and place, and honestly, you're about to go play in the Super Bowl. Why are you worried about Jacksonville?
Right.
Like, you got out. And you still get the chance to get the extension with the Rams. So you're not missing out on money. I mean, what are you worried about here? Like, what was so bad here about us not being humble, which, if I'm not mistaken, you very much well contributed to that.
Yeah, there are a lot of people saying that, yeah.
So...
Yeah.
I mean, let's just be a little honest here, Fowler. Let's call a spade, and, you know, if you want to put it out here, just put it all out.
Yeah, I'm with you. I will say this, like, he's... The key word in the thing about when he was talking about, and I agree with him about the locker room wasn't humble. We've seen all of, we for crying out loud, we talked about all the fights that's going on. And, you know, we've seen how the Jags reacted after going 2-0 against the, in the first 2 weeks. They just kind of declined after that. So, yeah, you can get a sense that they weren't humble. And he said the key word there was we. So I guess he's including himself in that whole equation. So he was saying he was a part of the problem too, technically. But what got me personally was the other statement he made about the team giving up on him is what, like, I didn't understand. And I thought he crossed the line with by saying that, because at the end of the day, you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars put up with a lot of stuff with Dante Fowler, and some of it, like, necessarily wasn't his fault, like the ACL injury. Look, they still took care of you, and they paid you, like, what, the next day after he tore his ACL or whatever it was in his rookie year? 2 days afterwards or whatever the case may be. But they took care of him, gave him his money. If I'm not mistaken, it was a lot in guarantees. Then they stuck by you throughout the incidents that we've talked about on the podcast, the traffic incidents, the police incident where he reportedly got into a scuffle with the police. Don't remember exactly what happened, but they swept that under the rug, truth be told. I mean, if we're looking at it, like, the Jaguars knew about that. They say they knew about it, at least. And it really just didn't ever surface to the media, to everybody else. So that was just something they just kind of swept under the rug and stuck with Fowler afterwards. And then, you know, it was other incidents that he's had that they just stuck with him by. Now, in terms of on the field, yeah, maybe I can see where he's coming from saying they gave up on him, maybe. But at the end of the day, it wasn't so much they gave up on him. It was just that Yannick Ngakoue, as we've talked about, he just outperformed Fowler. Clear cut and dry. And every year, you could tell that one guy was putting more into his craft every offseason than the other, if we're being honest. I mean, like, no, it's not like we have cameras following him and Yannick around during the offseason, but you can tell that one person was developing himself and getting better, developing pass rush moves. You know, I can recall Yannick Ngakoue talking about what he learned from Von Miller at the Pro Bowl. Like, with Fowler, you never got the sense that, you know, he was working on the offseason, although he could have been, but not to the extent that Fowler was. So, or should I say that Yannick was. So, that being said, this is a team that really stuck with you longer than they should have. And, you know, me personally, I couldn't have said that. I couldn't have spoke that upon the team that, you know, that bent backwards, essentially, for me. And that's where I'm at on it.
So here's the whole thing with me. When I hear, I feel like they gave up on me, I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, right now, like, are you, that's really what you decided to say? What I hear is my feelings are hurt because, you know, I got outperformed by a third rounder who came in and whooped my ass. You know what I mean? And really, and let's be honest, and the you know, the Dante Fowler's highlight tape here, you know, is full of, you know, unnecessary roughness penalties and all that. His right.
Big, from his big play against Brady.
Right.
And then the AFC championship game where he sacked him twice. But aside from that,
and then his biggest, you know, the biggest block he ever shed was when he took on a 60-year-old man in an apartment complex. Wow. You know what I'm saying? Like, wow. I don't want to hear this. You're about to play in the Super Bowl, dude. Like, we could have shipped you anywhere. You know what I mean? But we sent you to L.A. We didn't give up on you. You didn't perform is what happened. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't just like he's like, in this article, Ngakoue developed and outperformed you in every possible way, and you were expendable. Right. And you know what? That's what happened. We chose Ngakoue over you. That's what happened.
And another thing, like, for those, like, and I think a lot of it is Gator fans that's in Dante's corner. And again, he's right about them being humble, not being humble. But the thing about it is, like, from those comments about them giving up on him, I feel like he, it sounds like, at least just you, from the context of the comments, that he felt like, being that he was a first rounder, that he was obligated to be a starter. I mean, and I'm not saying that's what he's saying, but it just feels like he felt like he was enticed to that. When Yannick came here and outperformed him, like, what else is the team supposed to do? Like, let the better guy sit on the bench? Like,
it is what it is. He felt entitled. It came down to three things, real simple. One, you got arrested. Two, you got outperformed by a third rounder. Three, you weren't living up to, what was he, a top five pick?
Number three pick.
You was a top three pick. You weren't living up to potential. I mean, my God. Right. And like Phil said, we sent you to L.A. We could have sent you to Cleveland or God knows where else. I mean, let's just be honest here.
Hey, well, Cleveland would have been a good spot, though. They low-key, they were
yeah, but you got to think about it. But look at it. Yeah, Cleveland won a lot of games this year, but you got to think about it.
I still would rather live in L.A.
That's what I was getting. We sent you to L.A. It's like 75 degrees out now. It's like minus 12 in Cleveland.
Right.
Like, I get it's the offseason, but still, we could have sent you elsewhere.
Right. They sent them to somebody who basically, coming into season, Vegas thought was going to the Super Bowl anyway. So we sent you to a contender. Really?
If I'm not mistaken, he doesn't really start with the Rams anyway, so.
I think he does at right linebacker, right side linebacker, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay. Well, maybe he has an argument there, but I mean, the point still is, you haven't been that effective with the Rams. I don't remember hearing your name being called that much on TV.
Pretty well the last couple of games, you know, finally, but you know, I remember the talk on Jaguars Twitter was like they sent Dante Fowler to the Rams and then they lost their first game of the year.
Wow. Yeah, I remember that.
Just for comparison, look at the next, you know, there were a couple players that were at the top of the list on the D-line that were coming out that year, and it was Leonard Williams, Dante Fowler, and Vic Beasley. And look at the other two compared to how he panned out, and they went after him. Leonard Williams went 6, and Vic Beasley went 8. I bet you those guys would still be here if we had taken them, right. You know. So you know, it just reeks of a player who's obviously in a better situation. You know what? That's good for you.
Yeah, man. We're not mad about that at all. You're right.
That's fine. Just leave it be. It just I don't like it. You know. Right.
Me neither. Me neither. Like I said, man, you basically called out an organization, and we talk about all the time how the NFL is forever doing players dirty. Dante Fowler isn't a player that the NFL did dirty. They bent backwards for him, if anything, like I said. And you look at it, like, a lot of people will make the argument. I know I've seen this a lot on Facebook that, oh, we used him wrong. We should have used him as a linebacker. Well, for crying out loud, we drafted – when you get drafted number 3 overall – we're drafting you, chances are, to play a premium position, which is defensive, and not to be a linebacker, even if some people can make the argument he should have been a rush linebacker or whatever. But I never really got the sense that Dante Fowler would be a good stand-up rushing linebacker like he was in Florida. But, I mean, that's neither here or neither there. And, yeah, like Phil said, man, like, I couldn't have just spoke those words on the team that has done what they've done for Fowler. And we can't say that about a lot of players. A lot of players get done dirty in the NFL. But to me, I think, you know, they did all they could for Dante Fowler, in my opinion.
Look how they treated Mercedes Lewis. And that guy had been here forever. And, you know, right. And you know what I mean? They just unloaded him out of nowhere. And we sent you to L.A. LeBron is just sitting on your sideline, dude, like just hanging out, watching you play football. And you're going to come like, whatever.
And here's another thing. It's not like you blew out your ACL and you came back and you just underperformed. You blew out your ACL, you came back, you underperformed, and you stayed in trouble. Like, it was seen for like one summer, you got arrested 3 times in one summer, it seems like. Or at least there were 3 separate incidents in one summer. Now, some of them may have happened before, but they all became public knowledge in one summer. It's just like, we get it. If you want to talk from a strictly football standpoint, you might have a somewhat of a leg to stand on by saying they gave up on you too early coming off of ACL. But the counterpoint to that is you have Yannick who is outperforming you. So So what do we do? Do we change your role?
Yeah.
So the role changes.
And then they bring Campbell, who's obviously a better player.
Here's my thing, and it's a bunch of fans that, like, especially on Facebook, they really, like, tuned in and they commented to the article, and we appreciate the comments, regardless if you agree with us or not. But it was a lot of people saying that you just don't give up on players of that magnitude. For one, he wasn't good, and for two, just in my personal opinion, like, Dante, I'm trying to figure out how do I put this, man, like, he wasn't going to resign with us if we kept him, and keeping him wasn't going to turn the tide of our season either. As we all know, we need offensive help. Dante wasn't benefiting us in terms of, like, helping us out on the offensive end. So why not trade him and get a third round pick when you know he was going to be in a situation where this offseason, where he was going to be packing his bags and leaving? Because as we see right now, we are under the cap. We're over the cap by $3 million, and we can't even pay the Pro Bowlers the Pro Bowler defensive ends that we currently have on the roster. We can't even pay them. We got to restructure Calais for one, and Yannick is on the last year of his deal, so something has to get done there. So, like, I don't understand this argument of how we could have kept Fowler and why we shouldn't have traded him in advance and got something for him instead of waiting and getting nothing for him.
Exactly. I'd rather sell high than sell low. I'll sell early before I sell late.
Yeah.
If he's going to pack his bags and walk away for free, why not ship him out somewhere and get a pick?
I think what this comes down to when we're talking about just letting a guy walk away, I think really what we really need to discuss that we're missing is, should the Jaguars trade for Anthony Davis?
Yes. Put him at tight end. Yeah, we need a tight end, baby.
Nah, put him at safety and just let him pick off anything that comes that way.
Stretch across the field like Mr. Fantastic. One-handed pick.
Make use of that wingspan.
Yeah, man, I mean, that'll, you know, we'll just leave it at that. It definitely, you know, it just didn't make a whole lot of sense as far as his reaction to until all that. Like I said, just dreams of a player is still upset about something that's, you know, really, you know, out of his control and doesn't really seem to be relevant anymore. So, you know, we'll just leave it at that. And you know what, Dante, good luck. Good luck on Sunday when you face Brady and those boys. So, you know, speaking of Sunday, you know, we'll get to some football that's actually going to be played. And guys, it's just seems like yesterday we were having our first podcast of the preseason and we were all excited and football is back, and you know what? It's all coming to an end this Sunday, and of course we got the LA Rams, which I predicted would be in the Super Bowl against the Jaguars. So, you know, I was only half right. So, but I didn't put the Rams in the Super Bowl, and of course for like freaking Groundhog Day or something, you know, of course we got the playing up against the Patriots. So, guys, you know, let's make our official picks here. Who do you guys got as our official Jaguars Wire Super Bowl predictions? Who wants to go first?
Yeah, I'll take this. All right, so on one hand, I don't want Brady to win because Brady and Belichick can go fly a kite. So I'm going to pick the Rams. However, I'm surrounded by a lot of Falcon fans, so I'm extremely petty. The thought of Brady winning a Super Bowl in the Falcons Stadium after coming back from being down 28-3 is priceless and almost makes it worth Brady winning. That being said, I got the Rams 35-32. Their kicker hits the field goal to win it.
Wait, what happened to the Falcons, Jacob? What happened?
Oh, man. Yeah, man, as y'all know, I'm one of those Falcon fans that don't want Tom Brady to win in our stadium. So, you know, with that being the Falcons being my second team, and I've already said on the Cover 3 podcast, I guess I probably shouldn't change that. I think that the Patriots are going to win it, unfortunately, and I'm probably going to be sick that whole week, unfortunately. But I just, like, my thing is, like, the Rams, I've said this on multiple occasions, man, the Rams have way too much star power to have the defensive lapses that they have. And with Brady, it only takes one defensive lapse late in the game for him to win it. So, I just feel like Brady's going to come through, and man, unfortunately, in Atlanta. So, I'll go with the Patriots. And also, by the way, shout-outs to Trent Brown. He went to Westover High, the school that I went to. So, that's a good thing about the Patriots winning. So, I guess I'll go with score of – what was your score, Jacob?
28-24 Patriots. And real quick, you mentioned the Rams defense. You're right. They do have a bunch of lapses, but they show up for whatever reason when necessary.
Right.
That's the only time they show up.
Right, yeah. When it's crunch time, they do show up. But like I said, man, like I just got this eerie feeling that they're going to have one of those lapses at the worst moment, as we see with all the time when people are playing the Patriots. And if, for crying out loud, I hope it don't happen. I hope the Rams beat the living daylights out of them, to be honest with you. But I just feel like they're going to have like some four-quarter lapses on defense, and Brady going to have to hoist up that Lombardi again, man. That's just my gut feeling. Yeah, I know. It's despicable. It is.
I think what you always like to see is what I've been hearing people talk about all week is, you know, of course, Bill Belichick likes to take away your main weapon. And, you know, as of late, the Rams don't really have that. Like, you think, you know, during the regular season, it was Gurley, but like now it's not really, you know, it's been CJ Anderson or they'll throw it out, you know, they'll play action to death. And, you know, I don't know, but like, I just really like this Rams team. I picked them to win the Super Bowl against the Jags, and you know I really like what they put together. That being said, the Patriots are going to win once again. Because I'm really done picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. I'm over it, man. I just can't do it anymore.
My thing with picking against the Patriots, Phil, is like aside from when they played the Falcons. And, of course, I was going to choose the Falcons. Aside from that time, every time I picked against the Patriots, I've been right. And that includes the Giants game, the infamous Giants game where with the Tyree catch. Didn't the Giants beat them a second time, too, right?
Yeah.
So, like, every time I picked against the Patriots, aside from when I let my heart get involved because of the Falcons, like, they've lost. So, like, a part of me wants to pick against them, hoping they'll lose again, but I don't think it's going to happen, though.
Yeah, I think it's Patriots, something along the lines of, you know, I think it's going to be a good game, 31-28, something like that. And, you know, they host that damn trophy again, and then, right. You know, they go 10-6 next year, and then they win it again or some crap like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't
know. Like, we see another crazy call on the referee's behalf that's just going to upset everybody, which I'm that's another story for another time. The horrible officiating, that's another reason why I'm taking the Patriots, because the officiating is just god awful.
It's true. Yeah, well guys, you know what, that's it. We covered a lot of topics here today, and you know, it's good to be back and getting the groove of things with y'all. And you know, we'll keep this content coming throughout the off season, and you know, we hope you guys enjoy the Super Bowl. You know, if you have Super Bowl plans, just make sure y'all be safe out there. So, JJ, do you have anything you guys want to plug or talk about before we head out?
Go ahead, Jacob.
No, I got nothing really. Well, if you're not from Atlanta and you're heading to Atlanta for the Super Bowl and you hear this before the Super Bowl, tuck your jewelry, tuck your chain. Women will rob you before men will. Don't do anything stupid. If you're on the martyr, just keep your mouth closed and don't die, basically. And welcome to Atlanta. Enjoy your stay.
Yeah, be safe out there, y'all. I'm with Jacob. I love Atlanta, the city, but I know like people need to go there and be safe. So any of our listeners listening, be safe while you're out there. Be responsible as well. As for the projects I got going, I mean, it's pretty much
here in Atlanta.
me and Phil wouldn't know. We've been to the streets of Atlanta ourselves a few times. So anyway, in terms of the projects, I got of course more free agency stuff coming up, really. And you know, that's really about it. Of course, draft content. Gonna probably do a mock draft at some time. It's kind of hard to do a mock draft because we know the Jags need to trade up if they don't get a quarterback in free agency. So, like, you can't account for trades in a mock draft, but I might bend the rules because I am the managing editor. So, look for that. Look for more draft content. On Twitter, I'll be doing I've started breaking down a lot of the senior prospects of the draft. So, feel free to check out my Twitter page for that, @sportsgrind_done. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, guys, not too much on our end either. Well, me and Eric have been putting out some episodes for the Wait For Pod. We just did an episode about the Royal Rumble Pass now, so never mind about that. So we're doing a couple other, got a couple other projects coming down the pipeline. Convention season is coming up here this summer. So Orlando MegaCon is where we will be at first this year as far as our convention run. We're super excited about that. And yeah, Wait For a Pod on Twitter, and that's about it, guys. So look, man, it's always fun to link up with y'all, and you know, we usually end up running way longer than we want. That's because we're passionate, guys. We're passionate, we care, and we want to bring you guys the best content on the Jaguar airwaves, which we do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. I don't know, whenever we get these things out, it's pretty inconsistent, but
sporadic. But we hey, but we get them out there, okay? Except for that one lost episode.
Here again, I don't even really believe that you guys did it. You guys can just talk about it as long as you like, but I don't believe it actually. So, all right, y'all. Well, hey, make sure you're following the podcast, of course, on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Audioboom, Spotify. We're everywhere, man. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. Wait for it. Well, that's wrong. I'm in the wrong job. Jags Den.
Jeez.
Get your podcast mixed up.
The Jaguars Wire. Phil the Filipino. SportsGrind_Don_JDella. That's where you can find us. We hope to find y'all listening to this podcast in the future.
You need to go back on vacation, sir.
Probably. Yeah, so. Well, hey, guys, we really appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening again. Go Jaguars. Y'all be safe. We will see y'all next time.